head of a big fish and fur pelts of many species of creatures. But Matthias saw only the sword of Martin the Warrior. It hung from the fork of a tree root at the back of the viper's den. A large red pommel stone was set into the top of the hilt. The handle was of black leather and silver to match the belt and scabbard. Below a heavy silver crosspiece was the blade. Made from the finest steel, its double edges tapered to a ruthlessly sharp tip. Down the center of the blade ran a blood channel, either side of which were symbols which Matthias could not make out. This was truly the sword of Redwall Abbey. It was his duty to get it. Matthias moved more stealthily than he had ever done in all his life. Inch by careful inch, paw by whisker, slowly, painstakingly trying to make his body as small as possible, he flattened himself against the wall to get by the huge spade-like head. The tongue almost slithered across his face as it slid in and out, constantly repeating the dreaded name, Asmodeus. He felt the adder breathing, its cold exhalations carrying the sweet, musty odor of death stirring his whiskers. A coil moved and faintly touched his leg. Matthias sucked in his breath and squeezed closer to the wall. The snake blinked, sending the opaque tissue upwards. The young mouse was confronted by the wide open eye of the monster staring directly at him. Asmodeus! The eye filmed over again as the snake carried on with whatever evil vision it was dreaming. Sweat like ice water drenched Matthias's fur. Asmodeus had opened his eye while still remaining asleep. There was no other explanation possible. The moments of suspense ticked by for what seemed ages until Matthias managed to squeeze past the serpent's head. Avoiding the gigantic coils, he walked quickly and quietly over to where the sword hung from the tree roots on the cave wall. Matthias lifted the ancient sword down. Reverently, he placed both paws around the handle. Tighter and tighter he gripped it until the point lifted from the floor and the bright blade stood out level in front of him. He sensed how Martin must have felt each time he had held this beautiful weapon. The young mouse knew that he had been born for this moment. His grip causing the tremor of the steel to run through his entire body. It was part of him. Matthias's main concern was to get safely away with the sword. In the confined space of the snake's den, there was no room to wield the fabled blade. If he struck at Asmodeus, he would be crushed to death against the walls by the powerful lashing coils of the adder in its death throes. Nothing would be accomplished by such a foolhardy action. Like a seasoned fighter, the young mouse chose to nominate the time and place of combat. He looked around the den. The hole he had come through was obviously too small for the adder to have used for the same purpose. It served as a breathing hole for Asmodeus, also as amplification to echo the dreaded name through the caves and tunnels as a warning to intruders. Near the snake's tail, which lay directly across his path, he saw the skins and pelts on the cave wall tremble slightly. They were covering the only possible entrance and exit for a reptile of such enormous girth. Emboldened by his ownership of Martin's weapon, Matthias tickled the tail lightly with the sword point. It had the desired effect. The long, scale-encrusted coils rippled as the serpent changed position in its sleep. Speedily, he slipped through the curtain of skins into the passage. It curved in a crescent-shaped arc, bringing Matthias back into the main cavern with its luminous lake. Logalog came dashing, pale-faced, out of the cave that contained Gosim's body. Eyes wide with terror, he ran straight into the paws of his mouse friend, narrowly missing injury on the sword blade. Before he could be silenced, he yelled out in a panic-stricken shout,
"Matthias! Gosim's dead! I've just seen her in that cave! She's dead! Gosim is dead!"
In his den down the tunnel, Asmodeus came awake. Chapter 7. The captains of Redwall looked to Constance for guidance. There was no question of overriding her commands. Of all the woodlanders, she was the oldest and wisest creature within the walls. The badger was slow-thinking and deliberate, but straight as a die. Her knowledge was born of vast experience, the natural cunning of a survivor. Jess, Winifred, and Basil stood solidly behind Constance. They had just related to her the latest piece of intelligence received. The attackers would emerge from their completed tunnel sometime around mid-afternoon. The badger thanked them and shook her striped head knowingly. She had not been caught off guard, thanks to Formol. Now she would need the aid and specialized know-how of the mole leader to stave off this latest threat to the Abbey. Cluny the Scourge was still acting strangely. He sat in his patched-up tent at the far edge of the meadow and said nothing. Even when Kilconi marched jubilantly up with the news that the tunnel was within a fraction of being completed, Cluny sat and stared at the ground. He did not appear in the least moved by the good tidings. The ferret stood awkwardly, ill at ease, awaiting orders. Cluny sat unmoving, as if he had forgotten Kilconi's presence. The ferret tried once more.
"It's the tunnel, chief! We'll have it ready by this afternoon."
The warlord looked up blankly.
"Oh, yes, the tunnel. Well, carry on. You know what to do. I've got things to think about,"
he muttered absently. Outside in the meadow, Fangburn and Darkclaw listened in disbelief to the ferret.
"I tell you, he's off his rocker," said Kilconi. "Sitting there like a stuffed dummy, ha! Things to think about, if you please. Meanwhile, we've got the whole horde ready to go through that there tunnel and take the Abbey. What are we supposed to do?"
"There's only one thing we can do," replied the stolid Darkclaw. "We've got to carry it through ourselves while the chief's not well."
"Darkclaw's right," agreed Fangburn. "The three of us will take charge of the whole business."
They both looked at the ferret, waiting for him to express an opinion.
"I suppose you're right," Kilconi said. "But listen, the rest of the army mustn't get to know about the chief, otherwise they'll desert. You know, I can't seriously believe that Clune is out of his mind. Just you wait and see. It's probably just another grand old plan he's thinking up."
The trio of self-appointed generals marched down to the tunnel. They climbed inside to check upon progress. It was long, dark, and smelly. Weasels and stoats jostled past them carrying baskets of earth or dragging rocks and roots. Kilconi pointed out the finer details to his fellow commanders.
"Sure, we're right underneath the road now. The ground is good and hard. It didn't need any shoring up at all. Now, see the footings of the wall. Mind your heads. From here I've got some props put in to hold the weight. Farther on, the going gets really soft, but we've run out of decent timber. Still, I don't reckon it'll make a great deal of difference. If we move the army along fast enough, we should all be inside the Abbey before they know what's hitting."
Above the ground, a mole leaning his ear against a thinly beaten copper basin that was upturned on the earth listened carefully to every word the ferret was saying. He repeated it to Brother Walter, who wrote everything down word by word. Constance scanned the report and picked up her heavy cudgel.
"Before we know what's hit us, eh?" she growled. "We'll be doing some hitting of our own before the day's through."
From the southwest corner of the wall, moles had marked the exact run of the tunnel with two lines of cord and pegs. Formole and his team knew all there was to know about the diggings. Depth, approximate dimensions, the placement of shoring, even where the first rat's head was likely to break ground. The plan that Constance and Formole had jointly worked out would require very little hand-to-hand combat, much to the badger's displeasure. Two oversized cauldrons of boiling water stood ready on tripods with slow fires burning beneath them to keep up the temperature. Constance and the beaver positioned themselves behind these, tipstaves at the ready. All available mice and woodland defenders were gathered in two groups on either side of the cord-marked aisle. They waited, looking to the badger for further instructions. To a passing stranger, it might have looked like some strange abbey ritual. Two fires, two parallel cords, and all the serious-faced creatures gathered in two groups on the grass in the hot June afternoon, waiting silently. The armed ranks of the horde were formed up in the ditch. Fangburn marched up and down, issuing final instructions. It had not been an easy task getting them in line without Clooney there, but the persuasive tongue of Kilcony had assured them that the chief was aware of their every move and would deal with malcontents and troublemakers later on.
"Pay attention now," Fangburn called. "Dark Claw is up at the end of the tunnel. When the diggers break through, he will leap up into the abbey grounds. Four soldiers are with him. They'll hold off any attack while the rest of us get above ground. Now, once you are up, don't hang about. Make straight for the abbey building. Try to capture the Mouse Abbot. Dark Claw won't be with you. He'll take some warriors and fight his way through to the gate. Once it's open, the others will be able to get in. I don't need to tell you these are not peaceful creatures we're up against. You've seen for yourselves. They've had a certain amount of luck to date, but they are determined fighters. So, when you get up there, Clooney wants you to show them what a horde of trained soldiers can really do. Don't forget, the chief knows how to reward good fighters when it comes to splitting up plunder."
Clooney had fallen asleep in his tent. He needed peace to clear his troubled mind. But peace was not easy to come by when the Mouse Warrior visited his dreams once more. Try as he would, Clooney could not evade the grim Avenger with the sword. Shades of creatures that he had slain through the years came back to mock him. They got in his way, tripping him so that he stumbled and fell. Each time he would rise wearily and start to run again, the nemesis at his back, pursuing, striding unhurriedly, never changing pace as the wraiths of his dead captains Skullface, Redtooth, Ragear, and Cheese Thief hovered about, urging him to turn and face the warrior mouse. But he dared not turn. He kept running. Two weasel diggers thrust upwards in the narrow confines of the tunnel. They sprang aside as earth showered down and daylight poured in. With a seething press of soldiers behind him, Darkclaw stepped up to the waiting diggers. They boosted him upwards. He grabbed at the grass, his spear tucked under one claw. He stopped suddenly, his body halfway out of the hole. The first things he saw were two huddled crowds of small creatures. They stood either side of a double line of pegs and rope. Darkclaw grinned wolfishly. They were obviously playing some kind of silly little country game. He had caught them unarmed. A noise from behind distracted the rat. He swiveled around. He found himself facing two huge cauldrons which bubbled and simmered ominously over twin fires. Behind them stood the big badger and another strange-looking creature equally well-built. Darkclaw set his claws against the ground to lever his body out of the hole. before he could do anything to stop them, the badger and her companion tipped the bulky pots over. Darkclaw did not even get a chance to scream out a death cry. Boiling water cascaded down over his head in a hissing, steaming deluge. The force of the rushing water sent his body plummeting back down the hole. Endless gallons of scalding water hit the rats in the tunnel like a hellish tidal wave. The tightly packed rodents were instantly slain. On the surface, Constance cried out to the waiting defenders, "Jump in between the ropes! Now!" The weight of the combined bodies hit the ground between the lines. Constance began a steady chant, "Jump! 2, 3, jump! 2, 3, jump! 2, 3. Under the constant pounding of countless feet, the whole area that had been marked out by the moles suddenly sank into a trench. The tunnel had collapsed. The defenders stood and cheered in the depression directly above what had once been Kilconi's tunnel. The badger gave the order to stop. Formol and his crew moved in to block off the hole with rocks and rubble. Friar Hugo ordered the cauldrons to be carried back inside to his kitchens. The abbey creatures fell silent and drifted away from the heap of stones which blocked the hole, a fitting headstone for a mass grave of the enemy. At the tunnel entrance to the ditch, Fangburn and Kilconi were madly thrust aside as rats, weasels, ferrets, and stoats fought their way out of the tunnel.
"Hey, what's happened?"
Fangburn shouted.
"Come back here this minute. Where do you think you're all going?"
The defeated warriors ignored him. Caked with filthy mud and trailing broken spears, they dashed off along the ditch. Kilconi peered into the tunnel. All he saw was the battered body of a stoat, being borne towards him on what appeared to be a boiling wave of ooze. The ferret jumped backwards as the shoring burst and the tunnel workings caved in with a dull rumble of earth. As Clooney ran, another spectre appeared in his fevered dream. It was a hideous-looking thing, covered in a dark steaming substance. It stood barring his way with his arms stretched wide as if to embrace him. Clooney pushed it savagely from him. It moaned piteously.
"Chief, it's me, Darkclaw. Look what they did to me."
Outside the tent, Kilconi and Fangburn exchanged uneasy glances.
"You dug the tunnel, so you go in first."
"No fear, I'm only a ferret. You're a naturally superior rat. You'd better go first."
"Shall we go in together, then?"
"Better not. It looks like the chief's asleep. He might not thank us for waking him up out of a nice dream."
"Aye, that's true. Let's leave it until later."
Chapter 8. As Modius's eyes glared through the narrow hole in front of him, there were two creatures standing together in the big cavern, a shrew and a mouse. He hissed in anger. The mouse was holding his sword, his own beautiful sword. The adder bunched his sinewy coils and shot through the skin-hung opening. He bared his evil, poisoned fangs. No mouse was going to steal the sword of the serpent. Matthias seized the frightened gorilla shrew by his paw, pulling him along at a swift run.
"Asmodeus must know we're here by now. Come on, Logalog. Let's get out of this place, quick."
They hurried down the nearest opening, immediately spinning around and racing back. Asmodeus was in the passage, sliding towards them. They paused momentarily in the big cavern. With the shrew on one paw and the sword in the other, Matthias looked wildly about.
"Over there, Logalog, move!"
Skirting the edges of the shimmering pool, the two friends dashed into a smallish tunnel at the other side. Behind them, in the cavern, the giant adder settled down to a leisurely slither. His tongue flickered wickedly.
Asmodeus! No hurry now. They are not going anywhere.
With a cry of dismay, the fleeing pair saw the blank wall ahead. They had run into a cul-de-sac. Loggerlog had stopped. His teeth were beginning to chatter.
There's no way out. We're trapped.
Matthias continued running to the dead end. He felt the surface of the wall and ran his paws up and down it.
We must do something, he panted. There must be some way to escape the snake. Get hold of yourself, shrew. Think.
Asmodeus poked his head into the entrance. His sibilant voice called into them.
Stay where you are, little ones. I will come to you, Asmodeus.
Loggerlog had gone rigid with fright. He stood petrified. Matthias had begun digging furiously at the wall with his sword point. He gouged and thrusted, muttering to himself,
At least we've got nothing to lose but a sword and our lives. There might be something on the other side.
The sword struck a tree root. He dug around it, probing busily, until the soft half-form sandstone gave beneath the blade. Frantically, Matthias redoubled his efforts. Loggerlog gave a strangled sob. In the dim distance of the tunnel, Asmodeus could be seen advancing slowly but surely towards them. Matthias felt the sword of Martin break through the stone. He looked back over his shoulder. The giant adder was slithering closer with each passing second. He hacked madly to widen the opening he had made. Sticking the sword in the ground, he grabbed Loggerlog and shook him soundly.
Here, shrew, you are smaller than I am. Climb through, then see if you can tug me backwards by my feet. Come on, move yourself if you want to live.
Loggerlog came out of his trance. Leaping quickly into the hole, he scratched the damp, sandy grit left and right. Ducking beneath the tree root, he scrabbled awkwardly through into the tiny cell-like space on the other side. Asmodeus was close to Matthias now. Wielding the sword, the young mouse backed off. He felt the hole behind him and scrambled into it sideways, still facing his enemy. Taking care not to let the sword point drop, he shouted to his companion,
Loggerlog, can you see my feet? Grab hold of them. Pull me through.
Matthias hung uncomfortably. He tightened his paws on the sword handle and moved it from side to side with the sway of the big viper's head. Suddenly, he felt the shrew pulling on his feet. Wriggling his body, Matthias started to move backwards. Asmodeus bared his fangs. He moved forward at the struggling mouse. Matthias swung the blade at the snake's open mouth. It hissed and recoiled. As Matthias contorted himself to negotiate the tree root, he poked the point of the blade at his enemy's head.
Stay back, evil one, or I'll kill you, he shouted.
Asmodeus gave a low, soothing hiss.
Come to me, little mouse. Let me wrap myself around you. I will give you the kiss of eternal sleep.
With a triumphant shout, the young mouse disappeared completely into the hole. He fell on top of Loggerlog at the other side. Forcefully, the snake launched his great body at the opening, crumbling earth and rock as he pushed his coils through the aperture.
He's coming!
Loggerlog screamed in terror. Matthias shoved his friend behind him. Planting his feet wide apart, he hefted the great sword in both paws. Stay out of the way, Shrew. There's no more retreating. All ends here. The gigantic, spade-like head of the snake thrust itself through into the small space.
Give me my sword, Mouse, and I will make your dying easy,
he hissed. Matthias laughed in the face of the adder. Come and get it, poison teeth. Asmodeus tried forcing his body through with one swift thrust. He found his bunched coils jammed firmly in the tree root. Relaxing, he allowed his head to wave from side to side.
Look at me, my little friend. I can see that you are a great warrior. You are not afraid to gaze into my eyes. Look at me.
The eyes seemed to expand and dilate until they filled the whole of Matthias's vision. They dominated him. He could not tear his gaze away. Asmodeus continued in a persuasive undertone.
See, they are the twin pools of eternity. Sink into them, and you will find darkness and rest.
Logolog was completely hypnotized. Matthias, too, felt overcome by an immense lethargy. The adder's voice was a cold, dark, green velvet fog that threatened to envelop him. He stared deep into the deadly eyes. His lids began to droop heavily. Martin the warrior strode boldly up through the dark mist.
I am, that is. Matthias, why do you sleep? There is a warrior's work to be done here. Pick up your sword, Matthias. The evil one shall not have it. Strike out for me now, my brave young champion.
Asmodeus was working his body free, pushing forward. Matthias's eyes were shut. His lips moved with one word. Strike. Suddenly, the spell of the snake was broken. The young mouse's eyes snapped open, clear and bright. He swung the ancient sword high and struck at the giant adder. He struck for Redwall. He struck against evil. He struck for Martin. He struck for Logolog and his shrews. He struck for dead Gosim. He struck as Methuselah would have wanted him to. He struck against Clooney the Scourge and Tyranny. He struck out against Captain Snow's ridicule. He struck for the world of light and freedom. He struck until his paws ached and the sword fell from them. When Logolog awoke from out of the trance, he saw his friend Matthias the warrior. He stood shaking. His chest heaved with exertion, his paws hung limp at his sides. The great sword lay against the warrior's blood-flecked habit, its long, deadly blade crimsoned in victory. And the head of Asmodeus Poison Teeth, the giant adder, lay severed upon the ground, its eyes dulled in death, never again to hypnotize another living creature. Chapter 9. It was the afternoon of the following day. Matthias marched into the farmyard at the head of all the guerrilla union of shrews in Mossflower. He halted the entire regiment outside the barn and turned to Logolog.
Wait here, my friend. There's someone I have to see.
The young mouse stood in the gloom of the barn, knowing he was being watched. Without turning or looking around, he addressed the cat.
Julian, it is Matthias. I have returned.
The marmalade cat loomed up out of the half-light.
So I see. Welcome, little friend. Is that the sword you told me of?
Matthias proffered the blade for inspection.
It is indeed. Asmodeus the snake lies dead. I slew him with this very weapon. It is the great sword of Martin the Warrior.
Squire Julian Gingervere handled the sword with care. He laid it on a hay bale. Sitting next to it, he folded his paws under him and half shut his eyes.
Matthias, let me give you some good advice. I am much older than you and have seen far more of life. There are not many illusions left to me, and I do not want to shatter your dreams or blight your ambitions, my friend, but I must say what I have to. We squires of Gingervere are an ancient line. In the past I have seen many such tokens as this weapon. My grandsires owned a vast armory full of magnificent and valued battle equipment. No doubt your sword is indeed a beautiful thing. It is a tribute to whoever forged it in bygone ages. There are very few such swords as this one left in the world, but remember, it is only a sword, Matthias. It contains no secret spell, nor holds within its blade any magical power. This sword is made for only one purpose: to kill. It will only be as good or evil as the one who wields it. I know that you intend to use it only for the good of your Abbey Matthias. Do so. But never allow yourself to be tempted into using it in a careless or idle way. It would inevitably cost you your life or that of your dear ones. Martin the Warrior used the sword only for right and good. This is why it has become a symbol of power to Redwall. Knowledge is gained through wisdom, my friend. Use the sword wisely.
Matthias picked up his weapon. He was surprised at Julian's words. They were an echo of something that his old companion Methuselah had once said to him.
Thank you, Julian, he said. I will remember your lesson well. Now I must ask a favor of you. Would you come with me? I want you to be present when I speak to Captain Snow.
The cat sniffed disdainfully.
You ask quite a lot. I wouldn't do this for anyone else, you know.
Reluctantly, Julian stalked out into the sunlight with Matthias. There was an immediate spate of loud, frightened chatter from the regiment of gorilla shrews. Squire Julian Gingervere merely nodded and addressed them in a regal but distant manner.
Good afternoon. Very clement weather for the time of year, don't you think?
For the first time since the formation of their union, the shrews stood in slack-jawed silence, completely lost for an answer. As they strolled along, Julian protested to his companion.
Really, Matthias, I think you are asking a bit much of one. Does one have to stand around listening to that befeathered regimental bore giving air to his hidebound militaristic views? Oh, it's too much.
Matthias stroked the sulky cat's forepaw.
Come on, Julian. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
The marmalade cat stifled a yawn.
You don't say. Has another tree fallen upon the pompous old fool?
Captain Snow paced around the base of his nest tree. He glared at the cat, then at the mouse holding the sword. He snorted, hunching his neck into ruffles and folding his wings behind him.
Listen, mouse, I don't want to hear how you did it. Probably wouldn't believe you anyhow. But here you are, and I suppose that's that.
Matthias hid a smile. He tapped his foot in mock impatience.
I'm waiting, Captain Snow, sir. Remember your promises on oath?
The owl's eyes bulged with ill temper. He flung Basil's medal at the young mouse's feet.
There, take your medal back, you insolent little pup. I'm not saying another word while that salad-eating cat is within hearing range.
Matthias traced patterns in the dust with the sword point and spoke civilly to the owl.
Well, Captain Snow, sir, I never took you for a bad sport. Besides, I've got an entire regiment of shrews hidden all about. They're waiting to hear you honour your wager.
The owl spread his wide snowy wings and flapped upwards to perch on the edge of his den. Folding the wings and shutting his eyes tightly, he shouted out with bad grace,
I promise never to kill or eat another mouse or shrew of any type as long as I live. So there.
He hooted and vanished swiftly into his den. Instantly the shrews broke cover, dancing and whooping with delight. Captain Snow popped his head out of the nest.
Go away. Begone. I can't stand it. All those little dinners dancing around. It's too much, I tell you.
Excuse my mentioning it, sir, Matthias shouted over the hubbub. But what about your promise regarding our friend the squire?
The owl emerged grumpy and ruffled. Thoroughly humiliated, he called out to his former friend the cat.
It was all my fault. I apologize to you, Squire Julian.
He was completely taken aback by the cat's reply.
Not at all, my dear friend. It is I that must apologize to you. The whole incident was entirely due to my priggishness and lack of manners.
Captain Snow swooped down and perched near the cat.
Do you really think so? Oh, come on, Julian, old chap. I must share the blame. It was my barrack room feeding habits that started the whole thing. You mustn't blame yourself, old friend.
A rare smile covered the features of the normally laconic Julian. He purred comfortingly.
No, no. I insist that we share the blame, 50-50. Besides, the question won't arise now that you've sworn off shrews and mice. I say, have you ever tried a fresh trout salad with mustard and cress? Why don't you come over to the barn? I'm sure there'll be enough for two. I mean, trout's not exactly a vegetable, is it?
Wing in paw, the reunited comrades strolled off to the barn, chatting amiably as if there had never been a cross word between them. Julian was last to enter the barn. He gave Matthias a broad wink.
Who knows, my friend? Maybe the sword does possess some magic. Personally, I think it's the warrior who wields it.
For the first time in many days, Matthias laughed heartily. He felt so good within himself. After all the action and mental strain, travel and grief, he felt suddenly reborn, larger than life and brimming with newfound self-confidence. Certainly there were great difficulties and hard tasks ahead of him. When the time came, he would handle them. For the present, he was satisfied with this feeling of immense happiness. Holding the sword lightly, he balanced its point against the earth and laughed freely. It was infectious. Logalog joined in, then one gorilla shrew, then another, and still yet more, until the whole regiment and their warrior mouse friend set the countryside ringing from river to woods to farm and field with the happy sounds of their honest joy. Chapter 10. The Clooney that emerged from the ragged tent in the meadow was far from being sick in the head. The members of the horde watched the way he strode purposefully about. The old glint was back in his single eye. His orders were crisp and concise. Even the long tail had a fresh crack about it. The chief seemed sharper than he had been before. In the aftermath of the tunnel disaster, Clooney had called off the attack for a full day, withdrawing all his followers well back across the meadow. The warlord gave his horde time to recuperate from the fiasco, a whole day's leisure, with no recriminations and hardly any orders. The captains of Redwall wasted no time in making use of the temporary respite. Repairs were started upon the gatehouse door. Teams of woodland carpenters, abbey smiths and labourers, plus any creatures that felt the need to help, were lowered down to the road in large wickerwork baskets. Should the enemy in the meadow decide to make a sudden move, the workmen could be speedily hauled back up to the ramparts. All that day, the rope gangs were kept busy sending down wood, spikes, cordage, tools, and repair materials. Clooney sat and watched them from the distance as he talked aloud to himself.
"Good work, mice. Strengthen my gates. I wouldn't want to rule a fortress with broken doors."
Fangburn was passing. He overheard Clooney conversing with himself. Not sure whether the remarks were addressed to him, he stopped.
Are you feeling all right, Chief?
Never better, Clooney replied.
He pointed at the repair crews.
See that, Fangburn? Honest, industrious work. And what for, eh?
Fangburn hazarded a guess.
To keep us out, Chief?
No. To stop us getting in, Clooney chuckled. Get some soldiers and light a fire down in the ditch. Make it a proper blaze, good and hot.
Fangburn knew better than to question the reason for his chief's order, no matter how strange it sounded.
A big fire. Right you are, Chief. I'll get them going right away.
Fangburn hurried off, aware that Clooney was watching him. Shortly after, there was a huge fire burning in the ditch. The horde gathered close by to see what Clooney was up to. The crackling flames gave off waves of heat, causing everyone to step back. Above the ditch, the air shimmered and danced. Clooney stood in the ditch, claws on hips. He cracked his tail.
"Scumnose! Mangy fur! Bring up those dormice prisoners."
The 20 dormice were dragged forward in a pitiable condition. They cowered on the ground in front of the warlord, half-starved and dull-eyed. Clooney pointed.
"You, leader mouse, what's your name again?"
"Plumpen, sir,"
the bedraggled mouse replied. Clooney grabbed Plumpen roughly, dragging him away from his fellow captives on the ground.
"What are these other miserable creatures to you, Plumpen?"
he snapped. The dormouse explained in a shaky voice.
"My family, sir. My mother, father, brothers, sisters, and my wife, and two little ones. Oh, please, sir, spare them, I beg you."
Clooney laughed cruelly. His eye was devoid of pity. He leaned close to Plumpen and whispered harshly,
"What would you do to save them?"
The dormouse watched Clooney's eye rove lazily from his family to the blazing inferno.
"Anything, anything you say. What do you want of me?"
he screamed in his fear and anxiety. Clooney cracked his tail triumphantly, pulling Plumpen forward until their noses touched. The big rat's voice was as foul and evil as his breath.
"Listen carefully. You are going to open the abbey door for me, my friend. If you fail, your precious little family will pay the penalty now. Here is what you must do."
Constance hauled upon her rope. It was no hard task for a fully grown badger. On the other ropes there were creatures that could not compare with her for strength, but they hauled and pulled with an equally good will. Cornflower and Silent Sam kept busy supplying cool drinks and sweat cloths. The repair work went ahead at a steady pace. No one noticed that there was an extra mouse laboring among the workers in the roadway. Plumpen. Clooney had supplied him with a habit taken from the body of one who had fallen slain from the ramparts. Plumpen had concealed himself in the ditch and travelled under cover until he was level with the gatehouse. At the appropriate moment, he slipped out with a plank upon his shoulder and joined the workforce. They toiled away industriously, until Jess Squirrel, who was acting as overseer, decided that the work was completed, as indeed it was. The old gatehouse door looked as good as new. All the tools and spare timber were gathered up, and the roadway was swept. Satisfied with a job well done, the work crews stacked up their materials and were hauled up to the ramparts in the large grain baskets. Plumpen sat between Brother Alf and Brother Rufus. Across the meadow, he could see Clooney, watching. Always watching. Plumpen cursed the fate that had put him and his family in the hands of the rats. What a happy, friendly lot the Red Wall creatures were. He was served afternoon tea sitting on the grass in the cloisters. The Dormouse felt the good food turn to ashes in his mouth at the thought of his betrayal of fellow mice. But there was no alternative if he wanted to save his family. After tea, he wandered off on the pretense of carrying out some fictitious task. When there was nobody about, he hid himself in the old gatehouse den, which had once been Methuselah's study. Locking the door, Plumpen lay down, lonely and miserable, to await nightfall. Inside Cavern Hole, the Father Abbot addressed a morale-boosting speech to his captains.
"Friends, it will avail Clooney little to put the Abbey under state of siege. As you know, Redwall is virtually self-supporting. All we require to sustain life and comfort is here within these walls. Therefore, I suggest we carry on as normally as possible. However, the walls must always be guarded. I leave it to you, my captains. Stay ever vigilant against Clooney and his horde. I know that with your counsel and good judgment, we will soon see the day when the enemy are forced to go elsewhere and leave Red Wall in peace." There was loud applause for the abbot's heartening words, but Constance was not convinced. She whispered her thoughts to Basil and Jess.
"Never. Clooney won't leave us alone until either we are dead or he is."
Basil Stag Hare nodded in agreement.
"I know, old scout, but the abbot's such a decent old buffer that he believes there's good in everyone, even Clooney, what?"
"And so do I," Jess muttered. "I believe Clooney will be good someday. Good and dead."
Gradually the day drew to a close. Lights dimmed as Redwall prepared for a well-deserved night's rest. The meadowland and woods grew quiet and peaceful. On top of the walls, sentries leaned on the parapet listening to the evening bird songs. Across the meadows, the enemy campfires burned low into the soft June night. Plumpen waited another hour, as Clooney had instructed. Then it was time to make his move. Stealing quietly out of the gatehouse study, the Dormouse headed north, staying well within the deep shadow of the wall. At the small north wall gate, Plumpen drew a scarlet cloth from his habit. Smearing the bolts with grease from the cloth, he silently worked them loose. Kilconey lay watching the gate from behind a sycamore in the woods. Near to every other entrance, one of Clooney's most trusted soldiers was concealed, awaiting the signal. It was the ferret who was rewarded by the sight of the scarlet cloth being shoved through the door jamb. He hurried away to tell Clooney. It was dead of night when Clooney's horde moved out of the meadow. Around the embers of each campfire, bundles of grass and twigs had been wrapped in blankets. To the unsuspecting sentries on the wall, the bundles looked like sleeping forms. They sensed nothing amiss. The horde circled northwards through the meadowlands until Clooney judged they were far enough from Redwall to escape detection. He crossed the road at the head of his army. they filtered back through the leafy cover of nighttime mossflower towards the abbey. Now that his goal was in sight, Clooney used all the stealth of a stalking hunter, waiting until the entire horde was in position. Each soldier, crouching quietly among the ferns and bushes, knew the penalty for making any sound that would betray their presence. Not death from the defenders, but death at the claws of their own chieftain. Clooney could wait. He gave it another half hour, until he could actually see some of the guards on top of the wall nodding off at their posts. What was 30 minutes after he had waited so long for this moment? With practiced skill, he slid from his hiding place and crossed to the wall door. One gentle push, and the small iron door swung slowly open on its greased hinges. Clooney stood in the doorway as his soldiers filed past him on their way to the abbey building. There was little need to worry about the wall guards. Those who were awake would be watching the road or the enemy camp, their backs turned on the secret invaders. Plumpen stood by, anxiously watching the warlord. At least his family would be safe now. The Dormouse had faithfully carried out his part in the dreadful scheme. Clooney must surely keep to his word. He did not see the look that passed between Clooney and Fangburn. Fangburn swung the heavy club and brought it crushing down on the back of Plumpen's head from behind. The unlucky Dormouse crumpled to the ground without a sound. Clooney the Scourge bared his fangs, grinning wickedly into the dark. He had finally brought his horde into Redwall. Chapter 11. The last rays of the sinking sun streamed through the open barn doorway, lighting up formerly darkened corners. Matthias lay on the hay amid the remnants of an epic celebration feast. The guerrilla union of shrews in Mossflower had really outdone themselves laying out this spread. He picked up a truffle and tossed it away with a sigh of satisfaction, fearing he might burst if he forced another bite into his mouth. On one side of the young mouse, the gifts from Squire Julian Gingervere, Captain Snow, and the shrews were piled high. On the other was his sword, reflecting the rays of the afternoon sun. The guerrilla shrew regiment had chosen to sleep off the effects of the party outside in the sun. They lay about the farmyard, too full even to argue. Loggerlog shuffled lazily in and flopped down beside his mouse friend.
"Greetings, almighty warrior," he giggled. "Savior of the shrews, slayer of poison teeth, he who speaks with cats, friend-maker of owls and uniter of—"
"Oh, shut up, you noisy little devil," Matthias chuckled as he kicked Loggerlog off the hay into the dust.
"Do you know much about birds?" Loggerlog said. "What about sparrows?"
Matthias yawned. "Well, what about sparrows? I've had some dealings with them. What do you need to know?"
"Nothing really," the shrew murmured sleepily. "But there's been one reported over at the edge of the woods. Of course, no one can understand a single word that the savage heathen is saying. She's screeching away back there, hopping and dancing about, working herself up into a right old tiswas, or so I've been told."
Matthias sprang up, grabbing his sword. "Come on, Loggerlog. I speak the sparrow language. We'd best get over there and find out what's upsetting her." With a score of guerrilla shrews in their wake, the two companions set off for Mossflower on the double. Above the long grass in front of the woods, the sparrow warrior could be seen. She fluttered up and down, creating a raucous din. Loggerlog and the shrews were taken aback when Matthias ran ahead of them, shouting at the top of his voice,
"Warbeak, Sparrow, that are you, old worm warrior?"
Joyfully, the two friends reunited. They rolled about in the grass like a pair of mad creatures, pounding each other on the back.
"Matthias Mouse, old worm friend,
big fat warrior now. How are you?
The shrews were completely baffled. They sat about scratching their heads at the strange behavior of the sparrow and the mouse. Matthias chattered to Warbeak in the rapid sparrow tongue, telling of all that had happened since they last parted. Warbeak, for her part, told Matthias of her fortunes to date. Upon the death of King Bull Sparrow, Warbeak had been crowned queen. Dunwing, her mother, had wished it to be so. The tribe was happy under the wise rule of its youngest ever queen. No more would sparrows have to live under the claw of an unpredictable maniac. After Warbeak had related her story, she became grave.
Matthias, Red Wall have big trouble. We watch, see from roof. Ratworm make lot of plans, mice brave warriors. All a time fight back, beat ratworms plenty. But Warbeak watch ratworm king. He bad worse than King Bull. Him make bad plan. Catch Abby. Ratworm soon be inside Red Wall. Matthias mouse come quick, bring sword.
An icy claw of fear gripped Matthias's stomach. He sat down hard in the grass. Logalog shook his friend.
What she say, Matthias? You look as if you've seen the ghost of Poison Tooth. For goodness sake, what's going on?
It's my home, Red Wall,
Matthias said in a hollow voice.
Cluny the Scourge is about to capture it.
Logalog spoke urgently to the shrews.
Quick, get the regiment ready as fast as you can. We're off to the abbey at Red Wall. Tell them to catch us up. I want no argument or votes. Tell every shrew to be fully armed. We must march night and day if we are to save Matthias's friends.
Matthias picked up the sword of Martin.
By thunder, Logalog, you're right. I fought hard for this sword in order to save Red Wall. Come on. Shrew Mouse help you? How many warriors him got?
Warbeak chimed.
A full compliment, Logalog answered. About 500 shrews.
Warbeak spread her wings.
I bring Ulla tribe sparrow warrior. We come help.
Matthias shook Warbeak's claw warmly.
Thank you, Queen Warbeak, my friend. Now we must go. A strategy can be worked out on the way to the abbey. Let's hurry. There's no time to lose. It's do or die now.
The mouse, the shrew, and the sparrow plunged off into the green-wooded world of Mossflower together. One thing Matthias was certain of as he strode swiftly through the trees. It would be he, and he alone, who faced Cluny the Scourge at the bitter end. Chapter 12. The Father Abbot was awakened by a sword point at his throat. He was completely surrounded by snarling rats. Jess, Basil, Winifred, and Formal all found themselves in similar situations. The iron claw of Cluny's discipline was strongly evident throughout the maneuver. Complete silence had been observed. Only those held captive were aware of the horde's presence. The main danger to the attackers was Constance. As always, she slept out upon the grass in the abbey grounds. More than 20 of rodents, carrying a strong rope net between them, had stolen up on the sleeping badger. They threw the net over Constance, fixing it into the ground with long stakes and bludgeoning her senseless before she was properly awake. Cluny watched the proceedings with grim satisfaction. Red Wall was his. Small creatures rubbing sleep from their eyes in confusion were dragged out into the abbey grounds. Woodland infants wept fitfully as they clung to their parents. Bullying rats pushed and harried everyone out into the open where they made them sit on the grass. Abbot Mortimer, in his homespun nightshirt, was kept to one side with his captains. Their paws were cruelly bound behind them. They stood in stolid silence as sniggering rats referred to them as the ringleaders. Cluny the Scourge stood in Great Hall. surveying the marvellous tapestry. He did not need to steal scraps of it now. It belonged solely to him. Fangburn, Frogblood, Scumnose, Mangy Fur, and Kilconi came marching smartly up. They saluted him. "The Abbey is yours now."